So I think everyone knows on the first Sabbath of the month, we go over our Sabbath Bible study. We're going through the book of Revelation. So we'll pick it up. However, last time we were here, I noticed by a sharp-eyed question from one of our congregants that I had missed a particular verse that I hadn't explained in the end of 17. So when I went back to look at my notes, I saw that I hadn't explained that verse or covered it. So let me do it now, and then we'll pick it up and go right into 18. He said, "And the woman which you saw," this is Revelation 17, verse 18, "And the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth." Now God makes the identity of the woman, in my view, very plain. First, he says it's a great city. You'll find in the book of Revelation, there are several themes, and one of them is about two cities. There are two women, there are two societies, and there are two cities. Revelation describes two cities. One is holy, and the other is not holy. It's unholy. Revelation 3:12, Jesus said, "He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God," the New Jerusalem. So this is the city we're going for, which comes down from heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name. In Revelation 21:12, we'll read that, "Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband." And Revelation 21 mentions that city 10 times. It's also mentioned in Psalm 46:4. I won't turn there. Psalm 46:4 and also 48. Psalm 48, and I have in verses 1 to 3, and then also verse 8, and Psalm 87. Psalm 87 is which the hymn, "Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken, City of Our God," and it's about that city. And it's all the same city that's being talked about here throughout the Bible. So the one city is holy. The other is unholy. In Revelation 14 and in Revelation 16, we read, "And another angel followed, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city." It's pictured as a city because she has made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And that's in there twice. Revelation 18, now, that we'll go into, we'll talk about that city five times. So we're going to be focusing on that city. In Revelation, the city is called Babylon because that's the system she perpetuates. However, the Babylonian system was carried down by four successive ruling empires, which we've covered, and the last of which is the Roman Empire. So it starts off in Babylon and it ends up in Rome, but it's the same system that goes all the way through. And the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, and Daniel was given the ability to explain to him, explains this whole system that's there, which is called Babylon. And when it falls, the whole system will come down altogether. Daniel wrote, Daniel said to Nebuchadnezzar, "You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay, and broke it in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver," the whole system. "Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found." When God deals with Babylon, there will be no trace of it left. "The wind carried them away, so there was no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." Then the whole kingdom comes over the whole earth, and it replaces the New Jerusalem, the city that's over the whole area, replaces the old Babylon. The change is there. Then we're told in Revelation 17:18, it says, we're told that city reigns over the kings of the earth. That particular city is there, which reigns over the kings of the earth. Now, John lived in the days of the Roman Empire. And you think about it, the image in Daniel covers all the way from the Roman Empire when John lived to the revived Roman Empire yet to happen. It's still the Roman Empire all the way through that time. Just the revivals. And in the last seven revivals, as we saw last time, or time before last, with a woman riding this this military colossus. So when John wrote, he lived in the days of the Roman Empire. And the only city in that time that you could describe as a city which reigns over the kings of the earth was Rome. That was the only one that when the Bible was written, when John wrote this. In Revelation 13, we saw the second beast causes the inhabitants of the earth to respect the Roman Empire. And we went over that and we covered it. So it's a perpetuation of the Roman Empire there. And how does it do that? How does it perpetuate it? Well, as we mentioned in the past, there are several ways. That they respect their Roman roots, Roman laws, and Roman religious practices. And as you know, the Roman official buildings that were dedicated to the sun worship were changed over and became Christian. Basilica was the term in Rome, and it's still the term. It's the same one. They preserved the same thing. And the Romans worshipped the sun, and so now Christianity all of a sudden is actually worshipping the sun and using its old ways, and it's meeting on the sun's day to respect the day there. They observed the vernal equinox and the winter solstice, which were Christianized to become Easter and Christmas. And they preserved those Roman ways. They even worked in other Roman festivals, such as the Bacchanalia, which I think we call Mardi Gras today, March Grace. And it's to make it very clear, some refer to it as the Roman, the great city. It's named after the city, Roman Catholic Church. It's not the Italian Catholic Church. It's not the European Catholic Church. It's the Roman. And they make the point of that very, very plain. And as I said in the past, it's the Roman universal, that's what Catholic means, church, that comes from, resides in, and is dedicated to respecting Rome. It's very plain. Roman, the Catholic Encyclopedia, on the article Rome, I read this before, but let me go through it again. The significance of Rome lies primarily in the fact that it's a city of the Pope, the Bishop of Rome. See, it's not the Bishop of Italy. It's the Bishop of Rome. As the successor of St. Peter, is the Vicar of Christ on earth and the visible head of the Catholic Church. Rome is consequently the center of unity in belief, the source of the ecclesiastical jurisdiction, and the seat of the supreme authority which can bind by its enactments the faithful throughout the world. The Diocese of Rome is known as the See of Peter, or the Apostolic See, S-E-E. The Holy Roman Church, this is their article. The Diocese of Rome is known as the See of Peter, the Apostolic Church, the Holy Roman Church, the Holy Sees. See, titles which indicate its unique position in Christendom and suggest the origin of its prominence. Rome. One more sentence. You won't believe this one. Rome, more than any other city, bears witness both to the past splendor of the pagan world. Pagan world had splendor. Isn't that really something? And to the triumph of Christianity. It comes from Rome. So, the picture given here, as I mentioned last time, in the future end of this age, a wealthy, powerful, spiritual harlot whose actual roots go back to Babylon will be riding a beast, the final revival of the Roman Empire. Many kings and nations will be affected by her, and she will persecute the servants of God. And the kings will join themselves to this, quote, beast, and they will fight Jesus Christ at his return. Now, that brings us to chapter 18, which is the judgment of Babylon, is what the title of. In my Bible, it says the final, the fall of Babylon the Great. Now, let's continue then in chapter 18. Now, the fall of Babylon is in six sections. Five in chapter 18, which I plan to cover today. The fall of Babylon is verses 1 to 3. A call to leave the city is found in verses 4 to 5. Judgment on the city is pronounced in verses 6 to 8. Lament over the city's fall is from 9 to 19. That's a major part of the longest part of the of the chapter of the fall of Babylon. Then the destruction of the city comes in verses 20 to 24, and then a thanksgiving for judgment is found in 19:1 to 5. So let's start here, and then after that, after the judgment of Babylon, the thanksgiving for the judgment of Babylon, then in 19:6 comes the marriage of the Lamb. So we're getting up toward the end here, and we want to keep it in the perspective. Now, on the judgment of Babylon, the 20th century, the Tyndale New Testament commentary had some interesting comments that I thought I'd share with you on page 207 and 208. The Tyndale New Testament commentary. This is an introduction to chapter 18. In vivid and unforgettable language, John outlines the judgment of the great city. He describes her fall and its effects on those who were in sympathy with her. There are many coincidences of language with the descriptions of the fall of Tyre, Ezekiel 26 to 28, the chapters, and that of Babylon, Isaiah 13, 14, 21, Jeremiah 50 and 51. I mentioned several times Jeremiah 50, 51, two long chapters about the fall of Babylon. Continuing in the commentary, he, John, is catching up all that the prophets have said as they announce the doom of Tyre or Babylon or Nineveh. It's understood that this is applying to all these systems now, and they all come down toward this one at the end. Continuing, but he is not thinking... But he is thinking not of the fall of one city or empire, but of the collapse of civilization. And he's right. Final judgment means the overthrow of all that opposes itself to God. The whole system, from start to finish, is going to be destroyed. And remember that Daniel explained, when it hits it, then every trace of it disappears. Every trace. The end of human rule marks the beginning of the reign of Jesus Christ over the earth. We need to see that transition. We've seen it before in Revelation, and now we're going to see it again in this particular chapter. All right, let's go to verses 1 to 3. After these things, this is Revelation 18, 1 to 3. After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. He cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, a cage for every unclean bird, unclean and hated bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. That's that first section. Now it says another angel comes down from heaven. Now John is then pictured, we need to note, he's pictured standing on the earth now. Sometimes he's getting a vision in heaven, and now he's back on earth. So he sees it coming down toward him from heaven. Having great authority, this angel has great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. Now that's a remarkable thing. It's not your everyday angel. This angel has great authority, it's powerful, and his glory illuminates the whole earth. And he cried mightily with a loud voice. The Greek suggests, the Greek word for loud suggests an exceptionally strong voice. The way it's worded is unusual, and it points to a very powerful voice. If you look at Ezekiel 43, Ezekiel chapter 43. Ezekiel 43, we'll just look at the first three verses. Afterward, he brought me to the gate that faces toward the east, where the sun comes up. And behold, the glory of the Lord of Israel came by way of the east. The glory of the God of Israel came from the way of the east. His voice was like the sound of many waters, and the earth shone with his glory. This is very similar. Strong voice coming with light, and the earth shone with his glory. It was like the appearance of the vision which I saw, like the vision which I saw when, and you'll see the margin says he, some Hebrew manuscripts said he, or when I came to destroy the city. It doesn't make any sense that Ezekiel came to destroy the city. When he came to destroy the city, the visions were like the visions which I saw by the river Kebar, and I fell on my face. This was a remarkable thing. And it's similar to somebody coming here and dealing with things. You remember in Exodus, when the bush is on fire and Moses goes to look and see what's in it, it talks about the angel of the Lord came there. And then later, this angel said, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So he's called the angel of the Lord. And the word angel back in Exodus, given a capital A for that reason. So I don't know if this is talking about Christ himself or a remarkable angel, but for somebody to have an unusually loud voice and to shine on the whole earth, that does seem unusual. That seems quite different. And that's described, God is described that way back in Ezekiel. All right, this angel had a message too. And the message was, Babylon the Great is fallen. This powerful angel declares the end of Babylon. If you go back to Genesis 11, remember back in Genesis 11, this is where the word first came from. Well, actually, it's mentioned in Genesis 10 as well. But we'll pick it up when Nimrod started a city. Genesis 10 verse 8, Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, and some say that means in defiance of the Lord. He was a powerful hunter and in defiance of the Lord. Therefore it was said, like Nimrod the mighty hunter before the Lord. And at the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and then these other cities. So he began here. This is where his kingdom was Babel. Then the men began to multiply on the earth, and they decided to build a tower in Babel. So if you go to Genesis 11, now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass they journeyed from the east. They found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. So they began to build. They talk about a tower. Now let's go down to verse 7, where God says, Come, let us go down and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad. The reason the nation scattered is because God changed their language. He just popped in one cassette and took out the other one. How he does that, I don't know, but he can do it. And all of a sudden, he wanted them to scatter. He said, scatter through there. He said, no, we don't want to scatter. We're going to stay right here. So he just changed the language, and people populated the whole earth. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore the name is called Babel, because it was there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. That's where it began. The symbolic of all, the word Babylon in Revelation refers all attempts of humans to govern themselves apart from God. Now, the term Babylon as fallen is fallen is first used in Isaiah 21, verse 9. I won't turn there, but it's used there. And it's the same, and it's why the commentaries all recognize we've heard this before. We've heard this in Isaiah, we've heard it in Jeremiah, we've heard it in Ezekiel. This is a culmination of it, bringing it all together. I was taught that repeating the thing, is fallen, indicates a permanent falling. And that often does in biblical thing. And then it says here, Babylon the Great. Didn't say the great back in Isaiah. But here it says, Babylon the Great is fallen. Ancient Babylon, the Babylon the Great, is the pinnacle of Babylon that's going to come on this earth. And it's not here yet. Ancient Babylon seemed impregnable. They thought nobody could ever take it, and yet it fell in 539 BC. So the future Babylon, John is being shown, will seem impregnable and unable to be beaten. Who can make war with the beast? We'll see. But it too will fall, and when it does, it will never rise again. And it becomes in three headings, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, a cage for every unclean and hated bird. Such birds choose such inhabited lands. If you look at Isaiah 13, we want to go back to some of these prophecies, but if we went back to all of them, we'd be here a long time. But if you'd like to check them, you can find them referenced in most of your Bibles. If you have a Bible with cross references, they have it. All right, Isaiah 13, verse 1. The burden against Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos saw. And he talks about that. And then he said, let's go down to verse 6. Wait for the day of the Lord, for the day of the Lord is at hand. Or wail for the day of the Lord is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore, all hands will be limp. Every man's heart will melt, and they will be afraid. Pangs and sorrows will take hold of them. They will be in pain as a woman in childbirth. They will be amazed at one another. Their faces will be like flames. Behold, the day of the Lord. Now, here's tying in with the fall of Babylon and the day of the Lord, that other expression that is used over and over again when God intervenes on the earth. Behold, the day of the Lord comes cruel, both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate. He will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth. Now you hear this back in other prophecies as well. And the moon will not cause its light to shine. And I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. You know, we humans can get very haughty and very proud. And when we're put in a big position of authority, and we're especially if you're over the whole earth, you really begin to think you're really something. And even some have even called themselves God. Well, that's going to be changed. and they'll find out they're not God after all. Look at verse 19. And Babylon, Isaiah 13, verse 19. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. And that was the total destruction. It will never be inhabited, nor will it be settled from generation to generation. Nor will the Arabian pitch his tent there. Nor will the shepherd make their sheepfolds there. Then he goes on talking about, but the beasts, wild beasts of the desert will lie there, and their houses will be full of owls, ostriches will dwell there, and wild goats will caper there. And he goes on down, the hyenas will howl in their citadels, and the jackals in their pleasant places. Her time is near to come, her days will not be prolonged. That's a very similar prophecy to what we just read in Revelation. And it's also similar to Jeremiah 51:37. I won't turn there. Jeremiah 51:37. I mentioned those two chapters, 50 and 51 of Jeremiah. Okay, so we see this is a repeat of what has already come before. Now we're going to discuss Babylon's corruption. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. We covered a similar statement in Revelation 14:8. That's very similar. The Babylonian system is the major source of deception on the earth. And here, as we've noted, Babylon is understood in two ways. It's the city of the beast, the city that's there, and also the whole worldwide and deceived society. It means the whole society. It's one city, but it means the whole society set up in defiance of God. As noted earlier, the book of Daniel, Babylon began with Nebuchadnezzar and will end with the final revival of the Roman Empire. And her ways bring on God's wrath. Following down, it says, the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. Two groups mentioned, the political leaders, have been intimately involved with Babylon. They worked through. I still am amazed at remembering, knowing when I grew up, America was a decidedly Protestant country, and it was not a Catholic country. There was a big debate about the time when President Kennedy was, that's no longer a problem. Religion is not so important in America now. But still, as I mentioned previously, the United States did not have an ambassador to the Vatican until 1984. All those years, they had no representative. They wanted nothing to do with the Catholic Church. The nation didn't. But in 1984, under Ronald Reagan, interesting enough, they decided to have an ambassador there to participate in the political things that the Vatican makes possible, because there are advantages in working with that system. And so they did, but not until 1984. And then to see later, President Bush and President Clinton and others kneeling at the Pope. To me, at my age, it's just unbelievable to see that. I just can't picture that, but that's happening. It shows how things have changed since I was young. It's a total transformation, and we're in the mix now. We're part of the world's society that's going on. So it says, the political leaders have been intimately involved with Babylon. And the merchants of the earth grew rich from her excessive luxuries. Business with Babylon is good, they say. So we see the nations and the kings and the merchants in bed with Babylon. The last word, excessive luxuries, implies a self-indulgent. That really is a self-indulgent. This Babylon is, as they say today, filthy rich. JF&B commentary, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown make a comment on this word. It says, see 1 Timothy 5:11. That's where it says the widow will begin to wax wanton against Christ. He says, wax wanton is akin to the noun here. Translate wanton luxury. So he says it should be wanton luxury. The reference is not to earthly merchandise, according to him, but to spiritual wares, indulgences, idolatry, superstitions, worldly compromises wherewith the harlot, that is the apostate church, has made merchandise of men. Now this is JF&B's comment on it. And it's very interesting. These things are recognized. These things are understood to some extent, at least JF&B was written some time ago. People today don't know those things, but they're there. Now let's go on to verses 4 and 5. As I said, a call to God's people. And I heard another voice, this is a different one, from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Okay, now God's people, under pressure in the Babylonian system, and we can see it even today, under pressure, maybe participate in this system and get in and start dealing with it and becoming a part of it in this corrupt but often attractive system. If you get along with Babylon, persecution ceases. No more Sabbath problems. And wealth is available in Babylon. Now, of course, there are many scriptures against that. It's amazing how many times people have been told to leave. Abraham started off, leave. Lot was told to leave Sodom. Israel was called out of Egypt. Later, Israel was to leave the tents of Dathan and Abiram. So they said, back away from those tents, because trouble's going to be there. Get away from it. Many warnings in the prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah, I won't give you all the verses, but come out of her, don't participate with Babylon, don't be a part of it. Let me show you one in the New Testament, or show you two in the New Testament. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Here Paul is trying to tell the Corinthians they need to be different than the world around them. And so he says in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, let's begin in verse 14. He says, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? You can't mix righteousness and lawlessness. They won't mix. It ends up lawlessness. Or what communion has light with darkness? You can't mix light and darkness. It ends up darkness. You think it ends up light, but it doesn't. And what accord has Christ with Belial? You can't mix Christ with Belial. Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? Now, of course, sometimes we deal with it things, but they're not the same. And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? There's no agreement there. For you are the temple of the living God. He's reminding them of their calling. And as God has said, I will dwell with them and walk among them. I will be their God and they shall be my people. Now that comes out of Leviticus, the book of Leviticus. So he goes back to the book of Leviticus. That if we want God to walk in the camp, then we got to live the way God tells us to live. We can't live some other way because God leaves. I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, he says, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. These are quotes. I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. Now here's very plain in the New Testament, and also one you're familiar with, 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2. And verse 15, well-known verses. Here John is writing, and again, it's the same John who God used to write Revelation, and who knew the destruction that was going to be there. He said, "Do not love the world, or the things in the world." Now, the people in the world, you can certainly love and appreciate, but the system and the things in the world, he says, do not love. If anyone loves the world, if you love this society and the way it works, he said, the love of the Father is not in him. If anybody really likes this society and the way it works, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, and that's what the world's about, and the lust of the eyes, I want to see it, and the pride of life, the pride of human life that thinks they're so powerful and strong, and we're really quite pitiful, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away. The future of the world, we're going to read about here in Revelation 18. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. The society that God's going to build will not have lust at all. None. That's why we need God's nature, because that's what his nature is. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever, will live forever in the kingdom of God, of course. So, for Christians, compromising with Satan's system is fatal. As it's been stated, we live in the world, but we must not be of the world. Remember Jesus said, what if you gain the whole world? You win everything, you're on top of everything, but you lose your own soul. What have you really gained? Those are sobering words, and that's his message. And notice the voice calls to my people, and it comes from heaven. So we're tempted to think the voice that John heard may have been God's. Well, however, there are problems with that. The other verses make you question it. But you can see, come out of her, my people. That would be God's message for sure. He may send it by somebody else, but that's the message. And you'll find it over and over again. Lest you share our sins, you participate with the ungodly, and you start acting ungodly. That's the way it happens. Lest you share in our sins, and lest you receive the plagues. You share the sins, you end up in the same boat. Plagues can include sickness and disease, of course, but most importantly, the plague of receiving God's wrath, which will be poured out on Babylon, as described in the next few verses. So we don't want to do that. And there's a pleading, come out of her, my people, is the plea. It seems that many of the changes that were introduced really had to do with being accepted by this world. And we need to see that, we're committed to not do that, to not go that way, and to preserve the things that we've been given because they're really remarkable. All right, verse 6 to 8, a call for judgment on the city. Some people put this together above, and that may be correct, but one's a call out, and the other is a call for judgment, so there is a difference. Render to her just as she rendered to you. Repay her double according to her works. In the cup which she has mixed, mix her double. In the measure that she has glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. For she says in her heart, I sit as queen and am no widow and will not see sorrow. Nothing can happen to me. Therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine. She will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord who judges her. There's very strong verses, I'm sure you'll agree. In the cup which she has mixed, mix her double. Now, Babylon has caused so much trouble, as we'll see a little further on, that God doubles the response. God is love, but he is also to be feared. His love includes removing the deceiving and lying harlot from the earth. That's part of his love, so people aren't deceived. She says in her heart, I sit as queen and am no widow and will not see sorrow. Now God sees the corruption and he sees the attitude far more clearly than we do. She thinks she's secure, But she's not. Look at Isaiah chapter 47. We have to go back to some of these because they're just, it's just incredible. They tie together. And God has said these things before. He's just reiterating them in a different format in the book of Revelation. Isaiah 47. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne. Not sitting even in a chair. Sitting on the ground. O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no more be called tender and delicate. Take the millstone and grind meal. That's hard work. Remove the veil, take off the skirt, uncover the thigh, pass through the rivers. She's increasingly having to travel poorer and poorer and shabbily dressed. Your nakedness shall be uncovered. Yes, your shame will be seen. It is not seen now, but it will be. I will take vengeance, and I will not arbitrate with a man. He's going to judge, and this is how it's going to be. As for your Redeemer, the Lord of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Sit in silence and go into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no longer be called the Lady of Kingdoms. I was angry with my people. I have profaned my inheritance and given them into your hand. You showed them no mercy. On the elderly you laid your yoke very heavily, and you said, I will be a lady forever. Sit secure. So that you did not take these things to heart. Now remember the latter end of them. Therefore hear this now, you who are given to pleasures, who dwell securely, who say in your heart, I am, and there is no one else beside me. I shall not sit as a widow, nor shall I know the loss of children. But these two things shall come upon you in a moment, in one day. The loss of children and widowhood. Nobody follows her, children. They shall come upon you in their fullness because of the multitude of your sorceries, for the great abundance of your enchantments. You have trusted in your wickedness. You have said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge have warped you. She does have wisdom. She does have knowledge. But they've twisted her. And you have said in your heart, I am, and there is none, no one else besides me. Therefore evil shall come upon you. You shall not know from where it arises, and trouble shall fall on you, and you'll not be able to put it off, and desolation shall come upon you suddenly, which you shall not know. He continues, but I just wanted to show you how strong this is. And God, you know, if he said it in Isaiah, and he's waiting till now to do it, nobody can say he's impatient. He's taking his time. So he said here, therefore her plagues, back in Revelation 18, therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine. She will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord who judges her. Now notice God describes himself as strong. His power is supreme. And he said he judges. He has considered and determined what happened should what should happen to her. His judgment is not arbitrary. And he said he's not going to discuss this with Babylon. He's not going to arbitrate it. Here it is. He said that back in Isaiah. Now, brethren, I've noticed, and probably you have too, that God's judgment is not a popular concept up these days. People don't like to hear about that. But it's in the Scripture, and it's there. And we ignore it at our peril. It's important for us to see this and to understand it. So here he says, he's strong as a God who judges. And he says, I judge. Yep, I'm the one that does it. And he's the one with the final authority. Now the next 11 verses are about a lament over Babylon's fall. Let's begin in verse 9. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, the great city, the mighty city! For in 1 hour, your judgment has come. Now here we're discussing the kings of the earth. They are the political leaders who hold power in concert with the harlot. And they live luxuriously with the whole system now. Not just the one or the other, the whole system. I was reminded when I was in South Africa, we lived there for many years, the leader of the Zulus back then, and I think he's still alive now and still the leader of the Zulus, is named Gacha Buthelezi. He's a descendant of Zulu, Shaka Zulu. Shaka was his one name. But they're the Zulu tribe. And Buthelezi made an interesting observation. When the white man came to Africa, he said, we had the land and they had the Bible. And now they have the land and we have the Bible. Which I thought is kind of interesting. The missionaries came first. And then the merchants. And now the Bible is pretty well, you know, it's with the Africans and few of the whites are religious as they were in the past years. Well, in a similar way, this future Babylon is likely also to begin with the Bible. But the kings will end up with the land again. And the commerce and the business once again. JF&B makes this interesting comment on this verse. Contrasts the world's rejoicing over the dead bodies of the two witnesses, Revelation 11:10, who had tormented it by their faithfulness, with its lamentations over the harlot who made the way of heaven smooth and have been found a useful tool in keeping subjects in abject tyranny. Men's carnal mind relishes a religion that, like that of the apostate church, which gives an opiate to the conscience while leaving the sinner license to indulge his lusts. And that's exactly what happens. It's an astonishing thing. The religions today don't talk about God's judging. They kind of leave that out. He loves you, and he does. But there's more to it. There's more to it. He's got standards. If we don't live them, then it's not going to go well. Now, verses 11 to 18. This is a long section. And the merchants of the earth, we talked about the kings, now we're talking about the merchants, will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, and every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of most precious wood, bronze, iron and marble, and cinnamon, incense, fragrant oil, frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and bodies and souls of men. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more. The merchants of these things, who became rich by her, will stand at a distance for fear and torment, for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing and saying, "Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls. For in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing." Every shipmaster and all who travel by ship, sailors and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, "What is like the great city?" Now let's remember, in John's day, Rome was the center of world trade. It was the center of power, and it was the center of world trade. And if you read the historians, they will tell you they lived in ostentatious outrageousness and with great extravagance. They were filthy rich, to use the term that's used today. They were so rich it was astonishing. And they have stories about the wastefulness and the way they eat, and led to a decadence and a depravity that are legendary, as they say. Now, we can expect the same thing to happen again when modern Babylon appears on the scene. In fact, it may be that we're seeing early stages of it. We're in a most prosperous time the earth has been in. There are problems, there are difficulties, and various ones are trying to say, "Well, it's not as good as it looks." Another one says, "Well, it's better than you're saying," and they're arguing about how good. There's never been a time of prosperity like this. And it's, as I say, we may be seeing early stages of it. Now, the list begins with clothing. It talks about fine linen, purple and scarlet. Then it moves to precious materials such as gold and precious stones and pearls. And then it comes to every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object most precious wood, bronze, iron, and marble. Citron wood was a hard, fragrant, beautifully marked wood that Romans really liked and their cabinet makers did. Since it's every kind of citron, it seems to be that this wood came in various varieties, and so there were different patterns and colors, or however it worked out, maybe different fragrances. Next, they come to agricultural products: cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil, frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat. In those days, Rome's wheat came by ship from Egypt. Egypt's changed a lot since then. they have difficulty supplying their own food, I believe. But at that time, they used to service and send their wheat to Rome, trade it there on the Rome Wheat Exchange, if they had such a thing. The last that's mentioned comes livestock, cattle, sheep, horses, chariots, bodies and souls of men. I think we know all the first ones. But bodies and souls of men. There are some that think that's two ways of discussing slavery. That seems unlikely. But today we know that human corpses have value. In fact, if you're in a hospital with a relative and they die, you might be surprised how quick they come to talk to you to ask to donate the organs. Because they can use them. I mean, they're trying to help people. But this is the way it works. They're trying to serve and help because they can use the kidneys, they can use the various parts. And apparently, God knew this would be so. So he says the bodies and souls of men. It seems bodies had to do with cadavers, and souls of men might mean just slave servants in that way. So that seems to be what he's talking about. And one thing that's really interesting, well, notice the merchants do not cry the loss of the city itself. Oh, the poor people that lived there. No, that's not what they're crying about. But the loss of income potential. They say, look, nobody's buying our goods anymore. Nobody's buying our wares. Like the U.S. automakers. Nobody's buying their stuff, or not enough people are buying their stuff. And it's very difficult when you've got something, you're making something, and nobody's going to buy it. It's very upsetting. I mean, you've got your shareholders and all the other things. Those are some of the problems. Of course, they're much bigger here in Babylon, much bigger. I'm just trying to get a recent example. It says, the fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more. The things which are rich and splendid mean the super luxuries of life, and they'll not have them again. Now it says, the merchants of these things who became rich by her will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing and saying, alas, alas, that great city which was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls. For in 1 hour such great riches come to nothing. The kings of the earth lamented the loss of Babylon's power. The merchants lament the loss of material riches. And the next group is very interesting. It's those who earn their living from the sea. Also lament Babylon. Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, who is like this great city? The NIV says, all who earned their living from the sea. And it's probably a much larger group than we realize. There is a world of commerce out there. Have you ever seen these Discover programs or History Channel's mega ships, these huge, humongous ships? They can't get them big enough, and they keep building them bigger to carry more, because the more they carry, the less it costs for each unit. And the shipmakers will go over there. Now, if you go back in any story you like, you'll see it is filled with imported goods. It all came by ship, or maybe some by air. It's your TV. It isn't made in Peoria. Your computer, microwaves, cars, toasters, shavers, clothing, all made someplace else, and all have to be shipped and all carried. And it's trade. You ever see the ports of Hong Kong and the ports of Singapore? They're incredible. The ports of Rotterdam, and it's huge. It's amazing stuff coming from China, from Taiwan, from Korea, Long Beach, all various coasts along the West Coast and the East Coast. The trade is a problem. It's just got to move through there fast. They've got containers to move it quicker and more easily. It's incredibly large industries, astonishingly. Another thing, too, remember God promised to give Israel the gates. The gates control the sea lands. He also gave them the land gates, but we won't talk about that. And when you have the gates, that's military operations. It's also commercial. You control the gates, you can control the commerce that goes through it. Straits of Malacca. You'd be surprised how much is in there. And they're having a problem increasingly with piracy. Even in this age, it's amazing. So it leads to political power. The people who lost their livelihood, all this trade going on, become very emotional, and they continue to lament. They are devastated, verse 19. They throw dust on their heads, and they cried out, weeping and wailing, saying, "Alas, alas, the great city, in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth. For in 1 hour she's made desolate." The economy stops. It's a very big thing. We talk about little roils that are happening now. This is going to be much bigger when this happens. Much, much bigger. And things stop. Now, let's go toward the end. Verses 20 to 24. This is the finality of Babylon's fall. Verse 20. "Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her." Now, there are commentaries that are critical of this statement, that they should rejoice. You shouldn't rejoice at such destruction. That shouldn't do that. Well, God's people have a different view over the fall of Babylon. Babylon is the system that Satan uses to deceive the whole world and also to control the whole world. It's the system he uses. It hides things. I mentioned Christmas and Easter. If the world knew the truth, they'd be keeping unleavened bread and tabernacles. Sunday instead of God's Sabbath, and they enforced it. That's why it's called a mark. They enforced it so you couldn't learn about God's ways and learn on the day God set aside. That's a big deal. That's not a little deal. I went in to check the synod of... they call Sabbath keeping Judaizing. The synod of Laodicea, 4th century. Canon 29 says, Christians must not Judaize by resting on the Sabbath. They even call it the Sabbath with a capital S in this commentary. But must work on that day, rather honoring the Lord's day. And if they can, resting then as Christians. But if any be found to be Judaizers, let them be anathema for Christ. If they don't work, if they work a little bit on Sunday, that's all right. But if they rest on the Sabbath, they're in trouble. This is what they teach. This is how they keep the world deceived and how they keep the world controlled. And they introduce mindless ritual instead of worshiping God in spirit and in truth, in understanding the God of Israel. Babylon is the means by which the whole world can't find the way to peace. Babylon is what, not religious confusion, is what causes people to strap on bombs and go walk into a marketplace and blow everybody up. It's that thinking. And then other things that come up too. Only the true God knows the way to peace. Babylon is the political power that has always worked against the servants of God. You go back the whole history, they went against the servants of God all the way. Even tried to kill Christ as a baby and all his servants ever since. It's Rome that put Paul to death. It's Rome that put Peter to death. It's Rome that put Christ to death. The system's corrupt. It's against God's people. Let's go to Revelation chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6, verse 9. We've already covered this, but this was the fifth seal. And it's before the heavenly signs and before the day of the Lord. Revelation 6, verse 9. "When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held." We know that that Nero and others persecuted the Christians. "And they cried out with a loud voice, saying," they're speaking this metaphorically, of course, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" When you're going to take vengeance, God said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay." But he waits. "Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were completed." Babylon's got to rise again and go through the same thing again. And then God takes it. Now we're reading about God intervening here and God taking the steps to do it. Okay, let's go to verse 21, Revelation 18, verse 21 to 24. "Then a mighty angel took a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, 'Thus with violence that great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found anymore.'" You ever have a big stone go into water? There's a huge ploosh and a great trouble, and then it's silent. A mighty angel took a stone like a great millstone, threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found anymore. The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists, they didn't say flautists back then for you purists, trumpeters shall not be heard in you anymore. No craftsman of any craft shall be found in you anymore, and the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you anymore. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore, and the voice of a bridegroom and the bride shall not be heard in you anymore. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, and by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth. Even going back to Cain and Abel was a system apart from God, living apart from God's ways, living in the way of selfishness and not in the way of love. Now, a mighty angel took up a stone. Let's look back at Jeremiah 51. This is the second of these two long chapters on the same subject. But we'll just look at this particular passage, Jeremiah 51, verses 60 to 64. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that would come upon Babylon, all these words that are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Sariah, when you arrive in Babylon and see it, read all these words. I bet he really afforded that assignment. Go in there and stand in Babylon and reading Jeremiah 50 and 51. Then you shall say, O Lord, you have spoken against this place to cut it off, so that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but it shall be desolate forever. Now it shall be, when you have finished reading this book, that you shall tie a stone to it and throw it into the Euphrates. Then you shall say, thus Babylon shall sink and not rise from the catastrophe that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. Thus far are the words of Jeremiah. It's the same thing. One in the Euphrates, and this one says into the sea. So it's much bigger, and he throws it in. And it just goes down, it's gone. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, and by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. And in her was found the blood of the prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth. Babylon has a lot to answer for. JF&B comment on this, applied by Christ. He said, remember he said all the blood will come upon that generation? 23:35. Applied by Christ to a spot apostate Jerusalem. Jerusalem gets off, it's part of Babylon then. Which proves that not merely the literal city Rome or the Church of Rome, though the chief representative of the apostasy, but the whole of the faithless church of both Old and New Testament is meant by Babylon the harlot, just as the whole church, Old New Testament, is meant by the woman. The whole thing is one big system symbolized by it. All murder, as I said, from Cain and Abel on down, has come on humans living in defiance of God and under Satan's sway. Now, such defiance will end forever. Next comes chapter 19, which starts off with the heaven exalting over Babylon, and then the wedding of the Lamb, and we'll pick that up next time.